What's up, everybody? Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. I'm Will Pruitt, here today to talk about TNA Impact for the June 7th episode. And I am joined today by ProWrestling.net staff member Ryan Kester. Ryan occasionally hops in on audio. You probably heard him talking WrestleMania with me, talking WrestleMania previews. We've talked about Impact a lot. Ryan, how's it going today, man?
It's going good. How are you?
I'm hanging out. You know, I graduate with my master's degree tomorrow, so that's cool. Went and got my silly-looking robe today, so all that's going well.
Congratulations.
I'm excited. I'm just saying that so I get emails from people listening congratulating me. That's really all it is. Probably on my Twitter, there will be pictures of me pretending to be or acting like Randy Savage as Pomp and Circumstance plays, because, dear God, I can't resist when I hear that song. This will be like my third graduation, and I really like pretending to be Randy Savage, at least, you know, vocally, while Pomp and Circumstance plays. There's no other option for me, really.
Well, you have to do it when the opportunity presents itself.
Exactly. And how often do you get that opportunity? So, hanging out. But we're here to talk about Impact, but we're also here to talk about ProWrestling.net, and we're going to have full coverage of the Slammiversary pay-per-view on Sunday. Whether you're a member or not, check out our live coverage. Jason Powell's going to be talking about the show, covering it live. If you are watching, it's a great way to kind of compare notes with someone. If you aren't watching, it's a great way to keep abreast of the situation as it's going on. So check that out at ProWrestling.net. And if you are a member, you're going to get Jason Powell's exclusive audio review of the TNA 10th Anniversary Show, complete with his thoughts on every decision made, good or bad, and sometimes even a little backstage newsy news there. So that's a fantastic little bit. Plus, you get ad-free access to the site, access to the .NET members forum, where you can see what .NET members are saying about the TNA 10th Anniversary Show and tons of other stuff, and access to all sorts of audio interviews that you hear me talk about every time we do the All Access podcast. So, basically, ProWrestling.net. If you want to be a member, there's a link on the right-hand side of the page, and you should probably go there. Seriously. Come on. Let's do it. Go. Now. Yeah. Sweet. Well, now that I've got that out of the way, we're going to be... What was that?
Really quickly, just to put it in perspective, before Will or I started writing for the site, we were paying members. So it's something that we obviously believe in. We believe that it's a good value for your money. And sign up.
Yeah, I'd say, I know that with your disposable income that everyone has to spend on wrestling websites, you only have so many choices, and I can say that we, I think, hands down offer the best value. We offer the best bang for your buck, and especially if it's insider news that you're looking for, I think ProWrestling.net is the place to throw that cash down. So check it out. It's very much worth it, and, you know, a good group of people to interact with in the forum as well. So, with that said, TNA Impact Wrestling. We're going to do the show in a little bit of a different format today. We're going to actually do a pay-per-view preview type audio, talking about the go-home angles for each match, whether they were effective, what we thought of them, and give our predictions for that match. So, let's start at the very bottom of the card. And this one didn't have any build-up. Ryan, talk to me about Kid Cash versus Hernandez.
It's something that apparently is happening. Like you said, there has been absolutely no build for this. It's not even been a case of, like, they've appeared on television and then there was no build. It was just literally, hey, these guys haven't been around for a few months. We're going to put them in a pay-per-view match. Okay, then.
Yep.
That's it.
Yeah, that's basically it. Kid Cash was in the X Division. He was defeated by Austin Aries and hasn't really been seen since. Hernandez hasn't been seen since Anarchia was released or written off of TV and their car was towed. So, this is an odd one. Who do you think ends up with the push coming out of this match? Oh, and aren't they both heels?
Yes, last I checked.
Yeah.
So I can see them maybe. Kid Cash will get the push out of the two of them. Lord help us all if Hernandez is actually due for another push, because he, not only is he just not good in the ring, but he actually hurts people too. So it's just, I really don't, there's nothing about him that I want to see more of.
I think actually that Hernandez ends up with it because the show is in the Texas area, and TNA likes playing to that Latino fan base a little bit. So I think we see Hernandez leave this one with the win via border toss, and Kid Cash will probably break his leg somehow via border toss.
Okay, then.
Yeah. let's move on to Crimson. He is going to have an open challenge on this show, and we saw Crimson versus Austin Aries on Impact this last week. First of all, a quick note. I thought that that match was definitely something that you announce ahead of time, with your undefeated phenom and Crimson taking on your fast-rising babyface, Austin Aries. That's one you at least put on the website and talk about, because you want it to feel like a big deal. A lot of people don't realize that when we criticize what TNA does as far as not talking about something ahead of time, and WWE the same way, it's not that I think this match is going to draw ratings, it needs to be promoted, it needs to be a big deal. It really is that I'm sitting here going, you know, if you talk about this match ahead of time, it makes it feel special. And if you can make this match feel special, then all of a sudden Crimson and Austin Aries matter a little bit more, so they can make more money down the road.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely one of those cases of, it's a matter of presentation, because one of those guys is a very long-term champion, and then the other guy is supposed to have been undefeated for well over a year. If you don't hype that, then it's just, it kind of cuts the legs off of them.
Yeah, it definitely does. And we'll talk about Austin Aries a little bit later in this audio and his rivalry with Samoa Joe. But we've got Crimson, who snuck out a win in that match and then talked about Goldberg in his promo. And, you know, saying, you know, that's long, his streak is longer than that Goldberg guy. And then made an open challenge for the pay-per-view. Who do you think answers this one?
Matt Morgan.
Hmm.
I'm pretty sure this is how they're going to reintroduce him.
So you think Morgan is returning to TNA then?
Well, that's about the only thing I could really come up with. If he doesn't, I really have no idea who they're expecting to bring in for Crimson.
Do you think it's possible that it could be, you know, the one-night return of a superstar to job to Crimson? Or, you know, maybe they decide, hey, let's start pushing the Pope again.
Potentially, but I really don't get the impression that they're ready to end his winning streak at all, or undefeated streak, so I really don't think that if they're going to be pushing anybody, that it's going to start here.
Mm-hmm. So if they have no intention of winning it, do you think that reintroducing Morgan just to have him lose to Crimson is a good choice?
What I'm picturing is that they're going to reintroduce him and they're going to brawl, and it's going to be another one of those non-finishes. I'm not really expecting a clear finish coming out of a Crimson match anytime soon, and I'm really not expecting this to be one of their big points of the evening. It's just some way to get Crimson on the show, and if they're wanting to do something special with it, since it is the 10th anniversary, then I can see them going, you know, like, this is the time to bring back Matt Morgan so the show's newsworthy, but I definitely don't think the resulting match is going to end in a satisfactory manner.
Yeah, I understand that. This is the one that I don't really know how to pick, because I think the open challenge from a heel normally sets up the heel losing. That, you know, it's, they got cocky and made a challenge and didn't realize who could answer it, which the Matt Morgan thing fits into. And I guess I have more faith in TNA than for them to go back to the bad Matt Morgan Crimson finishes, because they've done so many of them. But, you know what? I'll say Matt Morgan returns and ends Crimson's streak. That's what I'll go with for this 10th anniversary show. It's a bold prediction, I know, but I feel pretty confident in making. Or not really confident at all, but I'm making it, damn it.
And as far as the show went that we're reviewing here,
yeah,
Crimson mentioning Goldberg, terrible idea. These two undefeated streaks should... if I was a writer, the last thing I would want anyone remembering whenever it comes to this kind of lackluster, they're kind of salvaging it, undefeated streak, is Goldberg, who's like the crown jewel of undefeated streaks in wrestling. It's like, that's the last thing you really want to be doing.
Yeah. Well, it'd be like Ryback, who is doing kind of the same thing, the Goldberg-type gimmick. It would really be like Ryback going, you know, I'm a lot like Goldberg, aren't I? Like, you don't call attention to it, especially when it isn't working as well as the Goldberg pose, as the Goldberg kind of, you know, streak went. So, yeah, I thought that was odd, and I know what TNA is trying to do, and it's, well, I'm better than this in history, and hoping that most of the, really most of the people watching didn't watch Goldberg. And we'll go, oh yeah, it is longer than Goldberg's streak.
Yeah, that's very little reward for a whole lot of risk, in my opinion.
Yeah, I definitely agree. So we have Crimson's Open Challenge working our way up. Then we have the one that everyone's been waiting for. The television champion, D-Von, accompanied by Garrett Bischoff, versus Robbie E and Robbie T in a tag team match. Impact built this one up by having D-Von with Garrett Bischoff in his corner continue his never-ending series of matches with Robbie E, who had Robbie T in his corner. Thoughts on this one?
It's the lowest part of the undercard is made its way to the pay-per-view, basically. Yeah, I tried to get a little bit excited about the television title whenever they first announced that it was going to be defended every week. I thought for sure that they were going to get a heel that they were thinking about pushing. Like, if they actually kept Joey Ryan off of the gut check segments, him capturing this title and then going on to be a heel about it every week, that could work. That could help get this title over. That could help, you know, draw attention, make it exciting. D-Von matches every week, on the other hand, that really hasn't caught my attention. D-Von matches with the same two guys every week definitely hasn't caught my attention. But now the inclusion of Garrett Bischoff, and you just have a good old trifecta of eh.
Yeah, I'm really curious about the decision to keep this title on D-Von as long as they have. And I mean, I understand what they're going for, and I believe it's that D-Von, you know, he's gotten in better shape. They kind of caught lightning in a bottle with Bully Ray. So maybe D-Von could be the same thing. You know, maybe D-Von could be the babyface equivalent, and we've got this next big babyface sitting under our thumbs, and we don't even know it, and he was a tag team wrestler. Kind of the way we feel about Bully Ray at this moment, where it's like, holy crap, that's good. But he's not that great in the ring. You know, he's decent. He gets the job done. He wrestles a power style. It's there. But he's not that great in the ring. On the mic, he's even worse. He's really not all that dynamic. Then, you know, you combine all of that with the fact that his challenger, I think 6 out of 8 weeks, has been Robbie E or Robbie T. Like, this feud has been going on since Victory Road when Robbie E made an open challenge and D-Von answered it through the crowd. Well, why should I watch this? Why should I want to see this when it's been going on for that long and it wasn't that good back in, what, March when it started? I mean, and in every one of these matches, pretty much D-Von has beat Robbie E clean. So why should I be watching? And like you said, then you add in Garrett Bischoff, who really isn't over. And this is where Garrett Bischoff belongs on the card. Let's put it, you know, pretty bluntly. This is definitely where Garrett Bischoff should be.
Oh, he doesn't even belong on the card yet.
But if you're going to use him, you know, this is kind of the space to do it. I'm not a big fan. Let's talk about the D-Von versus Robbie E match on Impact. they wrestled again. Robbie T got involved, and the referee, or basically, Robbie E, or D-Von rolled up Robbie E, and the referee was distracted by Garrett Bischoff. So Robbie T ran in and rolled the small package to favor Robbie E. And then Rob Terry distracted the referee, and Garrett Bischoff ran in and rolled the small package back over. And I just thought, oh my gosh, this is the dumbest referee in history. Because it happened for so long. So, there was that. And that's the build that this got. Then, you know, the baby faces ran off the heels and posed in the ring as D-Von's music played. I'll pick D-Von and Garrett Bischoff to go over in this one and hope that this ends the never-ending D-Von and Robbie E feud.
Yeah, I'm picking them to go over as well, with a special caveat that I think Garrett's going to pick up the pin.
Ooh. You're picking a Bischoff pin.
I'm pretty sure this is, you know, another example of where they're trying anything to get baby Bischoff over. So
that's what I'm going Bischoff.
With. Oh, baby Bischoff.
So next up, we've got Samoa Joe versus X Division champion Austin Aries. And this, at this moment at least, is a non-title match, which makes sense given the new weight limits on the X Division. But at the same time, Samoa Joe, former X Division champion, so you'd think maybe they would try to bend that rule, but they haven't. Possibly because Joe's put on like 50 pounds since then. Not that the rule would have been bendable in the first place. But this feud, you look at this match in a vacuum, and I get excited for it. Because, you know, Joe versus Aries should, you know, these are two guys who really cut their teeth in Ring of Honor, and it should be that nice American Strong style match that everyone wants to see. But then you look at how the feud's been built and how lackluster that has been with, you know, the spraying of water, and, you know, it's a feud about getting wet. That's, you know, Joe is angry because he was somehow sprayed with water. I mean, I have a feud with my cat that is just about the same, actually, that I sprayed her with water and now she's upset at me. We don't have to settle it in the ring in Texas. We settle things like men, even though she's a girl. Anyways, what do you think of this feud, and what's your pick for the match?
The build has been crap. The feud I'm excited about, the match I'm excited about, and as far as a prediction goes, I really think that Samoa Joe is going to be going over here so that they can have a reason for them to continue with the feud. At least that's my hope.
Yeah, that I hope that the feud continues. Samoa Joe's character. Gosh, I feel like I've been having this discussion since he lost the title in 2008. That's 4 years. Samoa Joe's character. What's going on? He was a heel when he started teaming with Magnus. But then him and Magnus turned babyface. There was the, there were those London shows. And then they were babyfaces. They went into even last month's pay-per-view as the babyface tag team champions. And now Samoa Joe is a heel again, fighting babyface Austin Aries. When did that happen?
Samoa Joe is a tough person to try to turn heel because he's one of those badass baby faces. Like, to this day, you'll still hear a TNA crowd chant, "Joe is going to kill you." He's always going to have his fans. So anytime you really try to turn him, it's going to fall on its face a bit. And then whenever you put him in a feud with Austin Aries, I can see a lot more people just getting excited about the idea of the match rather than actually giving Joe any legitimate heat. And it really doesn't help that for the past year or two, he hasn't been booked well at all. He's just kind of been there. He's been in holding pattern after holding pattern. He's delivered a few matches here and there, but he doesn't look anywhere near as motivated as he was in the past. So he's kind of just in this weird state of flux, and I think this is just another one of those, well, are we going to do something with Samoa Joe? Let's put him in a feud with Austin Aries. He's a babyface. Eh, who cares?
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the mentality that went into this.
I think they're using Joe as a utility guy. You know, we have these blank spots on the card, and we need to fill them in. And really, this is something I noticed, actually, as I started writing my preview and predictions column for this card that I haven't finished yet. Where are the heels in TNA? Where are the lead heels? You've got Bobby Roode. You've got Bully Ray. Who else? Like, you know, then you start working your way down the card, and it's kind of a steep drop-off to Daniels and Kazarian, who are in the tag team ranks right now. Then you've got Samoa Joe and Crimson, and, you know, Crimson should matter more than he does, but he doesn't, and you can't make him matter out of nowhere. Robbie T, like, the heels in TNA aren't there. There aren't a lot of lead major heels. And that's an issue. They recently turned Kurt Angle babyface. They recently, you know, turned Ken Anderson babyface, I think. There are all of these guys that they could use as lead heels or have up there and could be in better spots as heels than they are as babyfaces, but they've turned them so much.
Yeah, this is kind of what I was talking about whenever Austin Aries was getting ready for his turn. It was just like, it's like I completely believe he can be a competent babyface, but he was such a great heel in a company that needs strong heels. That's like dying for some strong heels. You're absolutely correct. There's quite a disparity between the heels in the company and the amount of heat that they get, and then the baby faces in the company and the amount of push that they get. I mean, you can just look at it. Like, the guy you quoted as the top heel in the company, Bobby Roode, he has been playing backseat to Sting for the past couple weeks. Yeah. And before that, he was playing backseat to RVD. So it's just, They really need to invest more in their heels than they have been. But this is kind of the situation you get yourself into whenever you have babyface authority figures. The heels are going to lose power because that's just kind of how it goes. They don't have as much of a leg to stand on. It's completely different than, and I'm not hyping this at all, for goodness sakes, but it's different than like in Immortal, where the Immortal era, where all the heels had pretty much all the power. They could run roughshod over the show, and it gave them a vehicle to have more weight. I mean, I think back then we were talking about how there weren't many baby faces hanging around.
Yeah.
So it's like, TNA needs to find a good middle ground. They keep using the authority figure drama to swing the pendulum in a complete different direction, rather than focusing on, like, here's a good core set of faces, here's a good core set of heels, and then writing storylines.
And maybe that's the issue. Maybe it is the authority figure that swings it so far, because when you've got a heel authority figure, you've got a heel, you know, you've got heels doing things, and then you get a baby face and it goes in that complete other direction. They just need to find a balance. That's something that TNA, we've been saying it for years. They need to find a little more balance here. And it's apparent when you look at this card, just how weak the heel side is. And I don't know what they do to strengthen it. You know, I don't know who, you know, do you turn someone? Well, who is there to turn that would actually make an impact? They've turned everyone they can.
Exactly. I think it's a case of they've just, and this has nothing to do with Hogan specifically, they need to downplay the authority figures. Like, if they want to have someone backstage talking, you know, or just opening the show backstage, hyping what's going to happen on the night, like, here's the matches I've set up, and then they just cut to the wrestlers and let the wrestlers try to get themselves over. That would be greatly to TNA's benefit, because as it stands, you have Hulk Hogan on several segments during the show. On the open fight nights, he's there even more, and then you also have the inclusion of Al Snow, Pritchard, and Taz. So the focus is always on them, or Dixie Carter's hanging around involved in something, so the amount of attention that the wrestlers can get goes down drastically because so much is put on getting the authority figure over. This was the exact same problem that they had during the Immortal time, because then the biggest heel in the company was Eric Bischoff. And then you had Hulk Hogan involved, and then Sting was there trying to combat the two of them, you know, and then Dixie Carter was sometimes around. It just, again, you take all the focus and you put it on people that aren't wrestling, then that doesn't give you enough time to get wrestlers over.
And when you do that, what does that do to your pay-per-view card? I mean, coming back to it, and we'll get to more of this discussion when we get to the tag team title match, but what does it do to your pay-per-view card when you put the focus on so many non-wrestlers, and then you say, buy this wrestling show? It, to me, it, you know, it makes it less valuable, because I'm not going to see the next development in these stories you want me to invest in. I'm going to see things that you've told me don't really matter.
Exactly. I've been, for a few weeks now, I haven't really been excited about the TNA product all that much, and I think that has a lot to do with it, because at any given time, you're going to be spending the majority of your show watching people talk about wrestling and talk about wrestlers and that don't wrestle. Like, it's not, I'm not going to go so far as to say it's not a wrestling show, but it certainly doesn't feel as much like a wrestling show whenever it's mostly authority figure brouhaha, and it's not watching guys work their craft, try to work a crowd, try to get a gimmick over, you know, all this, all the good stuff that we talk about that we love in wrestling. It's retirees or just people that own a company showing up and acting rather than, you know, rather than working with a wrestling show.
Yeah, exactly. It's TNA, you know, and they constantly put the focus on people in power and not the wrestlers, which I would be a little more critical of or say a lot about, but WWE has recently done the exact same thing with John Laurinaitis, and John Laurinaitis is part of every storyline in that company, which is just sad. You know, I didn't mind him at first, but now that he's in everything, it's just irritating. But we'll get to more of that discussion later, as much more as there is to have. Let's talk about Bully Ray versus Joseph Park. The Chicago lawyer against the bully from Hell's Kitchen, New York. And on this episode of Impact we are reviewing, we saw the contract signing between them. I thought this was a good segment. You had Bully Ray cutting a really good heel promo, like he does, saying, I'm not signing this contract, you have to sign my contract that says I can't be held responsible for what I do to you. You had Joe Park looking like he wasn't going to sign it, but then Bully Ray got him angry enough to sign it. And then, on your, you know, to twist it around a little bit, you had an Abyss video saying, I'm going to show up at the pay-per-view. And there was some bad acting from Abyss and from Joe Park saying, you know, don't leave me. Abyss, come back. Chris. I liked the exchange between Bully Ray and Joe Park. I thought that was good. I didn't love the Abyss video because in one promo, I felt like Abyss showed everything that I have disliked about him for years.
Yeah, like you said, I really enjoyed the work of Bully Ray and Joseph Park in that segment. I love the actual dichotomy between the two characters. I think they play off of each other very well. And the Park gimmick so far has done a very good job of being like, I'm not a wrestler. But when Abyss did show up, it was exactly like whenever he showed up a few weeks back, just kind of randomly at the end of the show. It's just, everything about Abyss is so over the top and so just, like if you've watched TNA for any length of time, you know exactly what I'm trying to get at. It's just not good. It's overdone. It's been overexposed. They've tried way too many things with that gimmick. To the point where it's just like, for a while there, it went away. and it was great. And I really don't want to have it back. like the best advancement that gimmick has had the entire time, you know, in the past several years has been it not being around. So after the long absence, you would think by this point, if there was any hope of it kind of being endearing again or me welcoming it back at all, then I would have felt that whenever he came back. I didn't. I just got more of, I went right back to the, oh, I can't wait until this is off my TV, the night it came back. That's not good.
Yeah. I thought that I might have a little bit of a honeymoon period with Abyss, given how much I have enjoyed the Joe Park angle and how really fun it's been. And, you know, he makes me smile, he makes me laugh. It's a situation where I'm enjoying watching him on my TV. But the first night they show him, you know, or the second night, I guess, of it, that they show him in a real promo, I kind of groan and go, oh, this again. And that's not the way you want me to do with Abyss, cutting his, you know, most stereotypically Abyss style of promo, where he's going, ass, and all of that. It was frustrating, to say the least.
Yeah, you could. The thing with Abyss that gets to me, and I think this was made quite clearly, especially after we've seen the Joseph Park character for so long. The person playing Abyss, I don't feel is really comfortable playing Abyss. Like, for that type of just over-the-top gimmick, you know, to where you're basically like a horror piece reject, for that to work, the person playing it has to be whole hog. It's like with, this isn't horror, but like with Brodus Clay. Funkasaurus would never, ever endear itself to anyone if Brodus Clay wasn't at least just completely, you know, behind it. Like, if he didn't just give it everything he had, it wouldn't be as entertaining. If Undertaker didn't give that gimmick in all its iterations everything he's had, then it would be crap. Same thing can be said for Kane.
Yeah.
But whenever it comes to Abyss, it's just, I feel like that's a case of someone wrote him a gimmick that basically was, it's two parts Mankind to one part Kane to a little sliver of Undertaker, and that's what you're going to do, ready, go. So he's just, it's like he's doing his best to sound threatening, to sound supernatural, to sound, you know, whatever, like a horror movie reject, basically. Then, but it just doesn't feel like it fits him. The Park character that we've been dealing with has been excellent, and it feels like it's right up his alley. But all the Abyss crap just feels like that. It feels like crap.
Yeah, it feels like Abyss is almost a cage that he puts himself in, and not the full extent of what Chris Park, Joe Park, whatever, can do. And that's part of the frustration I know that I have about it, is just, you know, what is that? Now, what do you think is going to happen at the pay-per-view? Do you think Bully Ray goes over? How does Chris Park and, or how do Joe Park and Abyss, how does that transition happen? What do you think we're in store for?
I really can't see them trying to bring a second person in and have, like, fake Abyss. Although now that I just said that, that could happen. Probably just a simple treatment of the lights go off, and then here's Abyss. I definitely think Abyss is going to be involved in some way, unfortunately. Maybe the big reveal is coming this weekend. I don't know. But I think it speaks a lot when my enjoyment of this angle just dropped almost completely the minute Abyss showed up and was like, Abyss. It's just... It's like, that's the inroad. That's where this all is headed. And it's just like, I really don't care. I don't want to see it. It's not grabbing my attention. It's not going to be a satisfactory conclusion to all the good that we've had up until this point.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I think we're going to get something... I don't know. It depends on if they want to do it super cartoony, because I could see Joe Park disappearing under the ring and Abyss coming out, then Abyss going under the ring and Joe Park comes out. Like, I could see this being like having 2 to 4 doinks back in 1993 and 94. I could see it going that way. I could also see there being, you know, it being this thing where they give a lot of abuse to Joe Park, and he gets beat up and beat down, and he's out, and suddenly he pops up, takes that tooth insert out, pulls out the mask, and, you know, kind of hulks up, Abyss style, rages up, whatever you want to call it, and, you know, the crowd gets behind him, and he beats down Bully Ray. No matter what happens, I don't see what Abyss does after this. You know, if he shows up and returns to the ring and that's it, where does Abyss go from here?
If they were able to pull off a like a multiple personality type of thing, to where basically he would be like the Abyss would be his Hulk, pretty much Joseph Park's Hulk. I could see that being entertaining for a little while. But the problem is you still have Abyss involved. And it's still a gimmick that has just been so overdone and so damaged with all of its little iterations. Like, I think the thing I used to say about Abyss was that it's like the man of 1,000 gimmicks, because they've literally tried everything that they could think of with him. So, unless the end game is that Park is who's going to actually be sticking around. And even then, now that, you know, after they make the reveal, it's not going to be what it is now. I really don't see how you come out of this and Abyss is fresh again and something that I want to see on my television each and every week.
Yeah, I don't see how Abyss becomes anything compelling again. But I'm willing to give it a shot. I mean, I didn't think I would ever be interested in an Abyss angle as much as I've been interested in this Joe Park angle. So, you know, let's give it some time, see where it goes, and maybe they'll surprise us again. And I really hope for TNA's sake that they are able to surprise us that way.
Oh, yeah. I'm always open to, you know, a company being able to prove me that I'm wrong. And if they can, more power to them.
Yeah. Let's get into now the TNA Hall of Fame. And this was mentioned just in a passing way on the on Thursday night's show. But let's talk about who we think it's going to be, what we think is going to happen, and if it's, you know, if the supposed choice is a good idea. And I'll just throw it to you. Who do you think goes in the TNA Hall of Fame?
Well, brother, if you look at the past few weeks of, or months, or the past few years of TNA booking, I can very easily see it being Hulk Hogan.
Hmm.
That's what it feels like. Like, I know some people have been, around the interwebs, have been saying Sting. And I could see that happening, maybe. I really don't think it would be the most compelling thing in the world, because none of Sting's best work has been in TNA. I could see them going with that, but I really feel like it's a Hulk Hogan thing.
Yeah, I could definitely see it being Hulk Hogan. Now, what do you think about the news that has come out that Christian will be appearing on this show?
Now, hold on. Has it come out explicitly stating that he'll be on the show, or did it just say that he'll be there? Because I think there's a difference. If he's going to be there for some of the VIP stuff and shaking hands, signing autographs and stuff like that, I could, you know, that's what I'm expecting. Has he actually, did they say he's going to be on the show?
Now, would you, I mean, there, Dixie Carter on her Twitter page has advertised Christian, basically. And I wouldn't be surprised, I mean, I'm a little bit surprised, but I wouldn't be surprised to find out that Christian is actually going to be the first Hall of Fame inductee from TNA. And the reason why is because he was one of those first big jumps. He's what, before Angle, before anyone. I mean, Honestly, Christian's jump to TNA is what got me to start watching the product. I heard Christian went there, and I've always liked him. And I tuned in and, you know, caught up on some TNA that I missed, including the Unbreakable three-way match and all of that. And, you know, he came at a really big time for the company. So for that reason, I could justify him going into a Hall of Fame, even though he's still wrestling, just not for TNA. But I think it will be Christian. I think they're going to, kind of make Christian make him a big deal over the weekend, but that's about it.
Yeah, they could do that. I really question the business sense in doing that. In really putting over a guy who's in your main competitor, who's crushing you for all intents and purposes, and making him something more special. I really don't understand that. You're right, he would make sense for the history, but... and then not only that, but where does the Hall of Fame go after that?
That is a good question. I don't see what they do with the Hall of Fame. Anyways, I mean, and you say, okay, well, we gave it to Christian. It's a good first pick. I mean, if it's just one person a year, well, it's Christian. You picked a guy who right now is a WWE upper mid-card wrestler and was kind of a main eventer for you. Okay.
Like, I don't know. I just think that would be pretty poor on TNA's part, because it's like, you know, their big Hall of Fame thing should be, like, one of the biggest guys in the history of their company. And if one of the biggest guys in the history of your company moved on to better things, that just means you're Bush League. Like, that, I think that pretty, especially because I think my biggest problem with the idea of a TNA Hall of Fame, right now is that they have just so recently put over Flair getting his second Hall of Fame ring. And it's not like it said TNA on it. You know?
Yeah.
He was on that gut check segment showing off his Hall of Fame rings. They put a close up of the WWE logo on his Hall of Fame ring. So I don't see how you go from legitimizing someone else's Hall of Fame to trying to say yours isn't Bush League. It doesn't work out for me. So, yeah, they could put Christian in, but the Hall of Fame itself just, I don't know, it doesn't carry the weight that you would expect a Hall of Fame to at this point.
Yeah, it's an odd choice to me. I mean, I think the obvious choice is Sting, as far as a guy who helped TNA more than anyone else has, who has enhanced them in the long run, and a guy that makes sense. But maybe they don't... I mean, this gets into our predictions for the pay-per-view main event, but maybe they don't want Sting to be the Hall of Famer and lose in the main event at the same time. Maybe they want a guy who's finished up with the company and to do something nice for him. But Christian's an odd choice, but I see Christian being a better choice than Hulk Hogan, to be completely honest. But
I didn't pick Hulk Hogan because I thought he would be the best candidate. I picked him logistically because it's just that's kind of how this company has worked since he got there. I mean, Dixie Carter has been gaga over the guy. He's been involved in everything, and he's currently the number one babyface in the company. So it's just with how that company has been operating since he got there, it seems like if you're going to be doing a vanity thing like the Hall of Fame, like it just makes sense to me that the people who put him in the positions they've put him in thus far would put him in there.
Yeah. I completely agree. I wouldn't be shocked to see it be Hogan, but then why do you bring in Christian for this show? And the news kind of coming out is that Christian was the WWE train to get Ric Flair. And, you know, if that's the case, I'd say that's a pretty good deal on WWE's part. And honestly, probably on TNA's part as well. Christian can be, if they advertise him, which they haven't, Christian could, draw some people to watching the show. And, you know, I just wonder, I guess, in the end, does Christian A, get punished on TV for being a TNA Hall of Famer, if he becomes one? Does he get pushed on TV for being a TNA Hall of Famer, or does it even get mentioned on WWE TV that he went into TNA's Hall of Fame?
I don't think it'd be mentioned at all. And I still believe that the advertisements for Christian being at Slammiversary are just that, him being there. But I really highly doubt that he's going to be in the TNA ring on TNA television. I don't see how that's going to work out. Because I can just as easily see, because whenever TNA sent Ric Flair over, that wasn't a big, like, he wasn't really focused on that much. It was just he was there with the Four Horsemen stuff. I don't know. I have a hard time believing that WWE would send one of their current champions over to another company to get on their pay-per-view. It doesn't strike me as a WWE thing to do, and I don't really think that's what's going to be happening.
I totally see that point. Let's move on now to our top four matches on this show, at least as far as the way the TNA website lists them, and talk about Brooke Tessmacher versus Gail Kim for the Knockouts Championship. And Brooke won this title shot on Impact in a four-way match with Tara, Mickie James, and Velvet Sky. Thank you. I knew there was someone else there. and that match was made by Brooke Hogan, who in a segment came in and surprised the Knockouts with a number one contenders match, these four babyface Knockouts, and said that, and also surprised Velvet Sky with the opportunity to be in a Montgomery Gentry music video, because Brooke Hogan's got the hookups, y'all. What did you think of this use of Brooke, and how do you think she did in her first interaction with the TNA Knockouts?
She did all right. About my only real, I don't know, I always get a bad taste in my mouth whenever I see someone's kid just getting shoved down our throat so much, because that is what happened here with Tanae and Taz just went completely gaga over her. But getting past that, she did all right. My only real complaint is that she seemed like she was kind of stuck record on, like, you guys are so beautiful. And you've got such nice clothes, and you're so beautiful, and we're going to be making a match, you're beautiful, and it's going to be for the Knockouts Championship, you're beautiful. It's like, really? Come on. Like, I started to type out each time she was saying things, and after a while I just said, she called them beautiful a lot.
Yeah.
So, yeah. By no means terrible. Just also by no means something special. It's just she was there. She did her part. That was about it. As far as the match itself goes, that was not good. It went on for a lot longer than I think it needed to, and something about it didn't capture my attention. I don't know if it was Gail Kim on commentary just having a very monotone delivery the entire time that kind of sucked the energy out of everything, or if it was that Velvet Sky and Tessmacher really didn't have the benefits of a pre-tape like they're used to, because there was a lot of botches in that match, and it wasn't even just like stuff that like internet people notice, but others don't. It's something that kind of at points killed the flow of the match, and they had to like readjust themselves. So it made for kind of a clunky affair that was kind of hard to watch, including the finish, which was Tessmacher trying to do her like reverse flapjack facebuster thing, where she literally just picked Mickie James up and then just dropped her on her face.
Yeah, the finish wasn't that great. I like the result of the finish. I like Brooke Tessmacher a lot. I think that she is a really great babyface for the division. Her in-ring improvement has been awesome, really, to watch. And she had a good match with Gail Kim last month on the Sacrifice show. So I like putting her here. I question the decision not to do this 2 weeks ago to give her and Gail some time to build up to another match between them. just to put it out there this way, and I know there was a knockout segment cut last week, so that might be part of it, but to put it out there this week, this way, 3 days before the pay-per-view really disappointed me. Tessmacher, I think, is a good foil for Gail Kim, though.
Yeah, Tessmacher is much better in one-on-one competition with someone that can support her a little bit. Like, I don't even want to really say that. I think she's just better in one-on-one affairs, where it's more of a basic delivery, the back and forth that goes on in a match. I think she's more catered to that type of style. Whenever I see her in a tag match or a four-way or a multiple-person match like this four-way was, she tends to get lost. And I think that's where some of the botches on her part come from. Velvet Skies are just because she is Velvet Sky and she doesn't seem to be able to improve at all. Despite my lack of interest in this particular match, I think that the contest at the pay-per-view is going to be entertaining. I think they need to do something different than having Gail Kim as the champion at this point, because it's just, she hasn't really brought anything special. Whenever she first started there, she had a cockiness about her. I might have just disliked her, period, because I really don't care for someone who takes out anger with a company on the fans paying for their product, but that's a different issue. So that might have colored my vision a bit back then. But since then, they've just kind of settled into a routine with her. Like, here's your challenger of the month. Here's the contrived reason why they're facing you. And that's just been it. And that's kind of, it's gone on for a little longer than it needed to at this point, so. Hopefully Tessmacher takes the title this Sunday and breathes a little life into that division again.
Yeah, I could really see Tessmacher doing something for the division as champion. And I think she'd be a lot of fun as the Knockouts champion, too. They highlighted on Impact that she was the only woman in the four-way who hadn't won the championship yet. She's a Texas girl. Her ring gear looks like the Texas flag. I think this is really building up to her winning the title in Texas. Then again, I said the same thing about James Storm in Nashville, and we saw where that got me, didn't it? Which, yeah. I just want to talk real quick about James Storm.
Uh-oh.
I rant about this constantly. But my big issue with it is James Storm loses one match, goes off to his ranch, and starts talking about how he's lost his passion and basically cuts the I'm losing my smile promo on a semi-weekly basis. James Storm is not a babyface that is super over. James Storm is not the guy, you know, the fans were paying to see yet. He was getting there. He was so close. And they started and stopped him, and they gave him that weird title win where he lost it a week later to Bobby Roode, and all of that strange stuff happened. James Storm is not over enough to lose his smile and retain his fans. I guarantee you, people are sitting there going, man, that James Storm guy, he's kind of a wimp. I mean, he loses one match and he goes off to his ranch and whines for a few months. What the hell's going on with him? That's what people are saying about him. They're not going, man, I can't wait for James Storm to get back. It's the exact opposite. And I don't see how TNA doesn't see that. I don't see how having an over babyface suddenly means you write him off of TV. Sorry, this is a very frustrating story for me. And a lot of fans know it's because I bought into James Storm. And, you know, I really like the guy. And I just see TNA wasting so much potential with him. And painting him as a whiny little B-word of a babyface instead of as, you know, the beer swinging, you know, the beer swilling, moonshine sipping, something, something, super kicking, Johnny Cash listening, badass babyface that he can be. Rant over.
Yeah, he's, make no mistake about it, his I've Lost My Luck promo, which was his version of I Lost My Smile.
It was great!
It knocked me on my ass.
But it's not the right time to do it!
Yeah, I still very much believe that they are doing a year-long build to Bobby Roode versus James Storm at Bound for Glory. and I think they're going to spend the month there leading up to kind of like the push they gave Bobby Roode heading into last year's Bound for Glory. But my fear there is that by the time they get there, we're going to have dealt with so many fluky Bobby Roode wins or title retentions that it's just not going to mean anything.
Yeah. I guess my issue with it, you know, aside from failing to make a moment at Lockdown, my issue with it is, instead of spending a year building up James Storm, instead of spending a year saying, Storm can do it, he's just not getting the chance, Storm's the guy, instead of spending a year making him just this superhero that you had to see go in there against Bobby Roode because you knew that he was going to win it, they've spent a year having him whine. They've spent a year, you know, they're spending their time in the wrong place for me. And you know what? He may come back in a few months and it might, or in a month, and it might be spectacular. It might be the greatest thing to ever happen to TNA. And I may sit here on this same audio podcast that has been going on for too long at this point because Ryan and I can't shut up, and I might eat my words. But at this point, I just don't see it happening. But enough about someone who didn't appear on the show. The World Tag Team Championship match is Christopher Daniels and Kazarian versus AJ Styles and Kurt Angle. And this is where the bulk of time on Impact was spent. We opened the show with Dixie Carter, with footage from last week after Dixie Carter told Mike Tenay to push that button. We opened the show with footage of Dixie walking backstage after that, telling random people to get out of her way and to shut up as she walked back to the production truck and talked to TNA's director named David about why he put that on the air. And for me, this was more of the peeling back the curtain brother stuff that TNA is trying to do. And I think with some success and some failure. And to me, this was a major failure. Mostly because this angle, the people in it don't have the acting chops to justify the curtain being peeled back. You look, something I liked, the opening of Open Fight Night with the four wrestlers talking to Hulk Hogan about why they wanted title shots. That was great for a number of reasons. One of the main ones is, they were saying how important the title is. They were saying how much it would mean to them to get a shot and to win it and why they deserve it. With Dixie Carter here, she can't get into that frame of mind and she can't act in a way where the universe around her makes sense. And what's happening is that she is dragging down the acting content of everyone else on the show. And I mean, this was a wrestling show that opened up with a director and a non-wrestling authority figure arguing about footage being played on the monitor. Dixie said in an interview, she wants to put out a wrestling product that non-wrestling fans will want to watch. I can promise you, there is not a non-wrestling fan on God's green earth that, A, wants to watch a product with a trashy name like TNA. Can't emphasize that enough. And B, is going to watch it. Because they're not wrestling fans. That's when you're not trying to target former fans. You're not trying to target, you know, people who might be fans. You're trying to target people who may never watch wrestling in their life and get them to tune in. And no matter what, it's still wrestling that you're trying to sell them, so they still don't want to see it.
Yeah, I didn't enjoy the opening segment very much, especially not that opening video, because it really, she just can't act. The type of content that this storyline is written around, which is, someone cheating on their spouse, and the craziness that ensues when that happens, she doesn't have the chops to pull off that type of drama. I don't have the chops to pull off that type of drama. Many people don't. There's a reason why we pay certain actors crazy amounts of money to act out storylines like that, because it's a great degree of drama. But so that happened, and it, I don't know, it, they've made it fairly obvious, or at least they're trying to insinuate that in storyline, these two, you know, the Styles and Carter character have slept together. So when that happens, we then pan to the Dixie Carter in the ring talking about, you know, and she's almost in tears, and she's trying to get sympathy, and she's talking about pawns and pebbles and crap, and it's like, at that point, I want to turn off my television, because under no circumstances can you convince me that the person who cheated on their spouse should get sympathy. Under no circumstances. Hell, half the crowd there was booing the crap out of her. It's just, you can't do that. It doesn't make sense. And I don't understand how TNA operates on this level, because they did the exact same thing with Tracy Brooks. Oh, I slept with Eric Bischoff 3 times. Feel bad for me. It's like, well, I could feel bad for you that you slept with Eric Bischoff, but you know, you also did it, you cheated on your husband 3 times because you're trying to get a job. No. It just doesn't work. You can't shove against that type of basic hatred that people have towards people who cheat. It doesn't make sense, and I really have no idea where they were thinking that would work.
Yeah. It's an odd situation. And again, it's trying to get sympathy on the person who is exposed as cheating on their spouse, which is just an odd place to be in. And do you think, I mean, they haven't said it. The commentators have, but Dixie Carter and AJ Styles have not said, yes, we were cheating. Do you think that's the plan for this story? Or do you think it's going to be a big misunderstanding, a fantastic swerve, and they were just planning, you know, a threesome with Surge or something, and now Surge is mad because he got left out of the planning stages? I mean, I don't see what else it could be. And I think there will be a big reveal at Slammiversary to bring it into that, but I just don't, I don't get it. Let's talk about the main event real quick with Kurt Angle, AJ Styles, and Sting teaming up against Kazarian, Christopher Daniels, and Bobby Roode. And just the AJ Styles and Angle involvement in it. AJ was late to the match. He didn't show up. When he did, he ran through the crowd, leading me to believe that AJ was doing some lecherous things in the back, because whenever AJ's not on screen now, I'm just going to think he's doing something disgusting with a fan or Dixie Carter or, you know, one of the Knockouts or anyone else, really. I've just decided that AJ is pretty lecherous now. That's what TNA is leading me to believe. But AJ comes running out and, like a house of fire, interferes in the match. And they completely, or the, you know, it seems like AJ and Angle are back on the same page, but then in a dive, the commentators were even sure to point out that AJ hit Angle with that final dive he did in the match, as well as their opponents. Do you think we're going to see some dissension between them going into this match?
Maybe. I'm not really, I don't know. I haven't really bought into the Styles and Angle storyline just because it's kind of been flat thus far. I really don't see a reason why they would have, why they would take the titles off of Daniels and Kazarian at this point. Especially with how tremendous their work has been the past few weeks. Styles, we didn't really touch on him earlier, but he's another person who doesn't really have the acting chops that's required for this storyline. Like, he kind of cycles through the same 3 faces to express an emotion, and it just, I don't know, it hasn't, he is someone that tends to not click with me as it is, and then on this storyline, it just isn't meshing well. I didn't really like the main event for several reasons. One of them we'll get into more whenever we talk about the Sting and Bobby Roode angle, but, yeah, I'm not terribly excited for this match.
Yeah, and the bummer about it is that you dig through all of that angle that has gone on before it, that Kurt Angle's just kind of tacked onto, by the way. But you dig through all of that, and you've got 4 of the best wrestlers in the world today set up for what could be a really great tag team match. And that alone excites me for this match. I like seeing Angle and AJ, even though it's more of an angle. Gosh, this is complicated. It's more of a storyline than them actually wanting the titles. It runs deeper than that. But I'm psyched about seeing Angle and AJ in the tag team title picture, because I think anytime you can get main eventers out there looking for your tag team titles, it makes the titles seem more important. So that's always a good thing to me, too. What's your prediction for this match?
I think that Kazarian and Daniels are going to go over. Potentially, if Angle and Styles have a little bit of friction like what you're predicting, then that could be their out for why they win. But I think by some nefarious means, they're going to go over. They could very well distract Styles with another piece of like proof or whatever mid-match, and then it leads to the victory. I don't know. But that is my... I am predicting at least that the champions are going to retain.
Yeah, I will predict the champions to retain as well. Do you think Surge gets involved and throws another craptastic punch at AJ Styles?
That's my least favorite part of that whole storyline, is that Surge is involved.
How awesome was that bump that Styles took, though? It was, at the same time, overselling and no-selling a punch. I didn't even think it was possible. But...
Yeah, that was a pretty mixed bag of terrible selling.
Yeah, like, for in 1 second, he looked like Shawn Michaels at SummerSlam 2005, because AJ just hit the ground hard. And then the next, he's right back up. Like... It's like, if you got hit hard enough to knock you down, and you're a guy who gets punched often, don't you at least stumble up a little bit? Or, if it didn't hurt that bad, why did you go down? Interesting. That was an odd part of this angle that I can't say I was a fan of. But, yeah, I just, this whole Dixie saga, there are rumors out there that TNA is pretty proud of it, that they think that this is one of the best things they've done in a long time. And I look at it and I go, really? And they see it as a ratings grabber, and we'll find out when the ratings come out today or Monday if it did grab those ratings that they wanted it to. But, I mean, as far as for my taste, and, you know, I'm just one guy, but for my taste, I don't think it's been well done, and I don't think it really deserves any praise. It's an odd angle, and it's really, I think that they're running the risk of compromising one of their big number one baby faces in AJ Styles as this lecherous dude. And, you know, unless he has an edge like coming out where suddenly it's like, lechery is awesome, it's my gimmick now, I don't think that this is going to be a positive in the career of AJ Styles.
God help us if this ends in a live sex celebration.
Dear God, I want to see that live sex celebration. Not for any, like, pervy reasons, but just because it's been so long since we've seen a good live sex celebration on the air, you know?
You've heard it here, folks. Wilfred wants to see a live sex celebration with Dixie Carter.
And AJ Styles, thank you very much. And Surge, let's just have that threesome we're planning. That'll be fantastic. So, our next match on the card is Rob Van Dam versus Ken Anderson versus AJ Styles, versus Jeff Hardy. I've got AJ Styles on the mind now. I just can't stop thinking about that live sex celebration. This is bad. Gosh, that is not going to help with what was being said about me on Twitter yesterday at all. That's going to be an issue.
This is breaking down quickly.
Yes, this is...
This is what you can look forward to if you sign up for .NET membership.
Yeah, this is getting into train wreck status. I promise everyone is better at this than us. So let's talk about Rob Van Dam versus Mr. Anderson versus Jeff Hardy for a number one contender shot, which will be cashed in a title match on Impact next week. Hulk Hogan set this up with two segments. One where he said the title was going to be defended and was confronted by Robert Roode, and we'll talk about that later. And another where he was confronted by Mr. Anderson in a promo exchange. He called out Hardy and Van Dam and then made the match. Hogan, in that segment, lost his voice, which was real cute. He happened to squeak a little bit as he called down Rob Van Dam. And then he seemed genuinely frustrated by the end of the segment, going, "You're fighting it, or you're fighting at Slammiversary in a triple threat. I'm done." And he kind of dropped the mic and walked out.
Yeah,
it's something for three baby faces without feuds right now to do.
Yeah, if you want to get a chuckle, go back and watch that little promo of his and hear one of the squeakiest high-pitched brothers ever. It's good stuff. But yeah, it's just kind of there. It's one of those little, like, get everyone on the card matches that actually, they managed to tie into a purpose. I really don't like that they did it during the go-home show to hype a match for next week, because that immediately makes it to where I'm thinking, all right, why do I want to pay for the title match this Sunday? Yeah. Because we're going to have another one next week, so I can skip that and I'll be all right, right? I mean, you're going to recap it. So, yeah, I don't really think that did a whole lot to sell the pay-per-view, but it should be a pretty good match. Hardy and RVD, they've shown that they can go. Anderson, not so much, but he can at least be a base for some of the other two guys. So I'm sure they'll be able to come up with something entertaining.
Yeah. I think they can come up with something entertaining. I don't really doubt the quality of the match. Trivia note, you've got 2/3 of the Bound for Glory 2010 main event here in Anderson and Hardy. And that was when both of them were kind of at their hottest in TNA, with Hardy turning heel that night, and Anderson seemed to have something good going for him coming off of a feud with Kurt Angle at Lockdown of 2010 that year as well. And we see how all of that has resulted, because they're both now not exactly at their hottest. I can't even guess who's going to win this. I can say that this match has possibly made me think about the world title match differently, but I can't say that I have thought about that I can even predict who's going to win this one, because you look at the matches for next week's Impact. Anderson and Rude is not going to main event pay-per-view, which makes it a perfect TV match, but it's not going to main event a pay-per-view. It's just not that big of a match. Anderson isn't that over. So then, let's get into... let's get into Rob Van Dam and Rude. That just main event and Sacrifice, they kind of used that feud up in a month. They had the ladder match, so maybe on Impact, the match works, because, it's on Impact. You can revisit it for a night, build it up, talk about their great ladder match, and in the end, Rude goes over. And then you've got Hardy and Rude, which was always left a little bit inconclusive, and I think they want to go back to it, but I don't know if the time is quite right to do that. And I don't know that you really want to go back to it with, Storm hanging out there, and who knows if they're going to have Sting in more title situations or what the deal is. And then if Sting wins the world title match, you've got all of those babyface versus babyface matchups, and, Lord knows they love hot-shotting Sting versus Jeff Hardy as often as they can, but I have a feeling they may actually want to make money off of that match at some point, so I don't know that they will hot-shot that match one more time. Just an odd situation, no matter how you look at it, but I'll pick Rob Van Dam. Who do you have?
Jeff Hardy.
Ooh. And why is that?
Because he's the one with the farthest away last shot at the title.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of going through a rotation with the guys, so I think that it's his turn again.
Nice. I could see that happening. I definitely could. Do you think that Impact match sets up a pay-per-view match, or do you think it's a one-off?
It may. I think that, for the most part, Rude is currently feuding with Hogan, so all these guys are just kind of tools. Like, these guys are the people who would... I mean, Rude said it himself in his promo. Hogan can't wrestle anymore, so Hogan just keeps throwing guys at him. That's kind of their story that they're going with. So they could use someone different. I really think that they're trying to do get Hardy in the main event next week to pop a rating a bit, and then that's kind of their goal.
And the best place to promote something where you're going to have the most viewers and be able to pop a rating? TNA pay-per-views, 8,000 strong. let's move on now to the main event. And I think we've both got a lot to say about this angle. And it is Bobby Roode versus the Icon Sting for the TNA World Heavyweight Championship. And let's run down the first Roode segment of the show. Talk about that. Then we'll talk about the main event. And then we'll get into our predictions for the main event of Slammiversary. So it's a tall task ahead of us, but I think we can do it. The first Bobby Roode segment of the show happened the first time Hogan tried to come out and make an announcement, where he said that at Slammiversary, saying that next week on Impact there is going to be a world title match. Roode's music hit, and he came out and cut an absolutely phenomenal promo on Hulk Hogan. Just so much about this promo worked. I think it was the perfect storm for Roode of intensity, of intelligence, and hell, let's throw in some integrity in there and give him the three eyes. But really, I thought that Roode just did a masterful job as a heel on the mic, and this was one of those promos where I stood back and went, Bobby Roode has it. As a heel, Bobby Roode has the ability, the talent, all the tools to become a big main eventer. And this just showed that to me more than almost anything Roode has done. It was a great promo and a great few moments from Roode. And then Sting.
Yeah, Roode was phenomenal here. And it really shows his that he's really coming into his own with this character that he's portraying. And I much prefer that type of promo versus his, I'm going to stand there and, like, all right, step one, complain. Step two, catchphrases. Step three, talk about another person. Rinse, repeat. So this was great. I loved how he kept cutting off Hulk Hogan because, for the most part, in their verbal exchanges, Hogan has gotten the better of him and then, like, made a match that Roode didn't want. So for Roode to actually come out on top of their exchange was very nice to see. And then, like you said, Sting happened, and every ounce of heat that Roode had just generated for himself went away because Sting was able to overcome him, beat him down, and send him up the ramp with his tail between his legs. It was such a huge swing from, like, a high. Like, I was getting ready to write up my little reaction in the middle of my review, celebrating that promo. But then Sting, there was no reason to have Sting come out there. None. And then, but then Sting actually got the better of him, and all that good was wasted.
Yeah, that was the strange thing, is Roode got all of this heat and just played the crowd, played, I think, the fans at home really well into just being this huge jerk. And then Sting came out and got his vengeance. Like, it was 1-2. It wasn't, oh, Roode's got all this heat and he's going into this match hot. No, Sting came out and shut it down. It was an odd creative choice to me, to say the least.
And not only that, but it wasn't even that Sting came out and got vengeance for himself. Sting, these past 2 weeks, it hasn't even really been about, like, oh, look, it's Sting. Yay, Sting. It's Sting is the guy who can physically do the stuff well enough to where he can wrestle for Hogan.
Yeah.
It's like Hulk Hogan is the one feuding with Bobby Roode right now. Sting's the one having a match with Roode at the pay-per-view. I'm really not impressed with the work that they've had Hulk Hogan doing since he came back. And it's not even necessarily the authority figure stuff, because while I am with you and Shore and just, like, I'm so sick and tired of this crutch that wrestling writers are using. Sting, earlier this year, he did a very good job with the general manager role. I think they overexposed him at points, but for the most part, he played the part well, and it felt like it fit. Like, whenever he made a match with guys going against Bobby Roode, it didn't feel like the Bobby Roode versus Sting thing completely outweighed the matches that were about to happen. This does with Hulk Hogan. So Hulk Hogan basically, Sting came out and got revenge for Hogan. And then, do you want to start getting into the main event?
Yeah, I'll talk about the Sting beatdown real quick. And it was just an odd way to do things. It really didn't. it didn't enhance the story being told. And then we get to the main event. And the main event, you know, basically, there were a couple odd moments in it that I want to point out. First was in the first minute of the match, the, you know, all-out brawl breaks out. Bobby Roode's on the outside of the ring in his corner. And Sting and Kurt Angle put, respectively, the Scorpion Deathlock and the Ankle Lock on Daniels and Kazarian. And Roode tries to get in to break it up. And both of these moves were happening in the ring. And the referee stops him. And I thought to myself, oh, I didn't realize that it was a two-man in, you know, that it was a kind of half-tornado tag match, two-in, one-out style of six-man tag. Is this like the Duchess of Birmingham rules or whatever they called that thing that they had back in the UK with the two-on-one man advantage for Joe and Magnus? Because that's what this felt like. That was a weird moment to me where they were... and then the ref was checking to see if either man tapped out, and I was just like, so what's going on, ref? What? Why can't Roode get in there? What's going on?
Yeah, I missed that component of the match. I must have been typing out what was going on, but that's kind of hilarious.
Yeah, it was one of those moments where you just go, what exactly are you doing, Tiny Hebner, with your shoes that match the ropes like a jerk face? What are you doing?
It's one of those only in TNA ref moments, because, I mean, they've had several of those where it's like, they start, like, the referee rings the bell whenever people are brawling outside the ring before they've even gotten in there. Or, like the small package fiasco from earlier in the evening. It's just one of those points where you get to where you have to be like, well, it's the referees in TNA. What are you going to do?
Exactly. So, we had that small moment of brilliance. But then the end of the match was... You know, Styles did his dive to the outside, and then Sting put Bobby Roode in the Scorpion Deathlock, and Bobby Roode tapped out to the Scorpion Deathlock for the second week in a row. The announcers made a big deal out of it, saying, if that happens on Sunday, Sting becomes TNA champion. We saw him last week tap out to it. We saw him this week tap out to it. We saw Roode get beat down by Sting earlier in the show and run off with his tail between his legs. Am I missing the part where they put heat on Bobby Roode?
Yeah, that didn't happen, so...
Oh, okay. I thought it may have been one of those commercial break things that they're doing now.
Yeah, I was quite furious at the end of my coverage. I think it's... I think if you go back and look, it's kind of apparent, because it's just... I wrote a quick little thing, and I'm like, oh, I'm done with TNA for tonight. It hurts my brain to think about how they've booked Bobby Roode thus far. And here's his match history against Sting since winning the title, okay? He tapped out, and he took Sting's finisher to win.
Yeah.
That's it. So why in the hell would I order the pay-per-view this Sunday? I understand the idea behind trying to build up Sting.
Yep.
Even though they don't have to, because Sting has been around for so long and he's established. But I understand the idea of trying to build him up as a threat. But there's a balancing act in wrestling booking that is pretty basic. It's you've got to get this guy over, and you've got to get a reason for fans to want to see this guy get beat. They haven't done that, because for months, Roode has just won with fluke victories, and after a while, that gives you diminishing returns. And it's to the point where it doesn't give you anything, because he hasn't had a credible win since... Oh, no, he had a couple recently. So he's had a couple, and then he tapped out in two consecutive weeks. So it's just...
Yeah.
The last... We did a countdown together not too long ago, and I said that Bobby Roode doesn't feel like a champion. He still doesn't feel like a champion.
And TNA was almost there.
Yeah, they were like, doing...
That win against Rob Van Dam meant more. And I think a lot of people are going, you know, think that we're overestimating what that was. But that meant so much more than any others, because he got a win against Rob Van Dam in a non-fluky, non-stupid way where he actually just won the match. Like that, what happened? Oh, he won the match. And you know, that's how it ended.
You know what's the worst part about that? Is that people have actually been saying that that might have not have been the planned finish because...
Because of Van Damme's knee. Yeah.
Yeah. That, yeah. So, to think this could have also been another... that could have been another fluke of Rude winning, which would have just made that all kinds of crap. That, but yeah, that's where my frustration for TNA comes in. And, like, I dealt with a couple of people after the... after my coverage last night, who thought that I'm just trying to piss on them. No. I don't have anything against TNA. In fact, I think the reason why I get so pissed about all this stuff is because I actually care. I want to see these guys succeed. I want to see these wrestlers make some money, and I would love to cover a very entertaining product.
Yeah.
That's not what happened last night.
Well, it's just funny. Hey, if you work for a site with a TNA in the name of it, you probably don't get to call people out for being biased. Just a quick little shout out to some wrestling websites out there that have, I've dealt with some of the same people you have that say we're being biased. No, I want TNA to succeed. I like, I've been so positive about them, talking about those shows that led into the live show and how great I thought they were and how I thought that TNA was on this creative high. I mean, read that blog. I was drinking that TNA Kool-Aid as fast and as furiously as I could because they were doing such great stuff. And then we get this show, and we get last week's show, and it seems like... And actually, let's pause here because I have kind of an overall statement I want to make about TNA as a product. But first, Bobby Roode versus Sting, who do you pick?
Bobby Roode. What? I'm going to hold to my idea that they're building towards a string of fluke victories for Roode, and then they're going to build up James Storm whenever he comes back as, like, the guy that can get him, you know? I think that's where they're heading. I don't think it's the most convincing thing in the world, but I think that's really where they're heading.
Okay. My pick? It was Sting. For the longest time, it was Sting.
Yeah, you predicted this back during our lockdown.
Yeah. Audio. When we talked lockdown, I said Sting is the next TNA champion. And I said it would happen at Slammiversary. And so far, everything that I've said has happened. So 45% of me now is saying that Sting is going to win this match. 55% is saying Bobby Roode. And the difference comes in that number one contenders match. That's what pushed me over the edge. Because that's all baby faces, and I think they want to keep Roode going. They don't want to put Sting in a baby face versus baby face situation at this moment. That said, I wouldn't be shocked to see Sting walk out with the championship. I wouldn't be floored. I'd just go, well, yep, that happened. And I think it would be the biggest mistake that TNA could make. And I know that they're sitting there in Nashville in their offices right now, or in Dallas in their conference room in the hotel saying, it's the 10th anniversary show. We could use a feel-good moment. Sting is not the guy to get your feel-good moment with. And I really believe that. And it makes me sad that it's not James Storm getting the feel-good moment. It makes me really sad that this Bobby Roode versus Sting match is more about what TNA has been for 10 years than what they can be for the next 10 years. Because it's the Attitude Era, the NWO era star, coming back and getting a big push above other young talent. And that disappoints me immensely on a, just on the note of someone who has watched the TNA product since 2005 and for 7 years has wanted them to succeed, has wanted them to grow, and has wanted them to do better. And I've constantly seen them blow opportunities to do that. Now, the overreaching point that I wanted to make is that it seems like TNA now in this live show, in this high-pressure situation, instead of doing what they were doing before, has started telling stories at a frantic pace, has started trying to cram too much into each episode, and has started trying to tell just too much story and stories that are too convoluted. And it just makes me sit there and go, yep, Vince Russo was not the problem in that company. Even though shows improved after he was demoted and after he left, the shades of Vince Russo booking still, you know, they're still there with TNA and with that product, and it doesn't seem like they're going to start avoiding that anytime soon.
Yeah, I don't think I completely agree with that in the sense that I felt that frantic shove everything on the show pace before they went live. So long before they went live, actually. So I think it's just more of the same. I actually had an emailer email me last night asking when TNA is going to go live because they heard it was happening soon.
Awesome.
So that, yeah, that's pretty indicative that not a whole lot has changed, and that's a problem. Because if you've been live for 2 weeks, and I still had someone asking me, when is it going live? Now, that could just be a case of, I hope it's a case of they just hadn't been watching, and they were just wondering because they wanted to know when to start watching, and they were, like, late to the train. But if they've actually been watching that, and they can't tell it's live, TNA has a problem. TNA has a big problem.
Yeah. And TNA, I mean, you know, being live doesn't solve 75% of your problems. Being live, in fact, probably has created more than were there earlier. And I want them to get it right. I want them, after Slam, you know, to have a great show at Slammiversary. And I'll say it, this card looks fantastic. I think Bobby Roode and Sting, you know, they had a good match at Victory Road. I don't think they'll match that match because they had a lot of shortcuts to use there. Unless Hogan makes it a surprise no disqualification match. But I think Bobby Roode versus Sting can be good. I think the tag title match, you give it some time, you get Dixie and Surge out of the way. I think the tag title match can be great. Aries versus Joe looks like a, you know, it could be a show stealer. Joe Park versus Bully Ray looks great. You know, if you're going to buy a TNA pay-per-view, it's hard to go wrong with this one, to be honest. Kid Cash versus Hernandez is a match on the card. Crimson is challenging someone. Hell, you're even getting Garrett Bischoff, people. But seriously, like, I really think the triple threat, Hardy, Anderson, and Rob Van Dam should be decent. You know, for as far as bang for your buck goes, this could be a really good show. And, you know, after Sacrifice last month, I'm a little less hesitant to recommend a TNA pay-per-view. Because I don't think that it's as much of a hazard to do so. So, that said, how would you grade this edition of Impact? Let's letter grade that ish.
D?
That's where I went last week.
Maybe lower. Maybe minus.
I'll go C. I was at a D last week, and I think they improved some things, and there were... Last week, to me, was a lot of fail, and this week was slightly less fail. But...
I think...
Yes.
I think for me, the overreaching problem is that I wasn't entertained by this show. Like, the entire time I was covering it, this is the metric I use. For anyone's wondering how my brain works, whenever I'm covering a show, if I look at the clock and I'm like, where did that hour and a half go? That's a pretty good indicator that I have been entertained for that past hour and a half. But last night, I looked at it, I think, every 5 minutes, because it's just like, how much longer? Oh, okay. It nothing about what they were doing really kind of captured my attention. The matches were okay to subpar. And then the two things that stuck out to me the most were Bobby Roode's promo, which was amazing, and then he got undercut. And then the finish of the main event, where you had... him tapping out to Sting again. Like, there's absolutely no reason why that had to happen. It really killed my desire to see the pay-per-view. Like, if I was just a paying customer, it wasn't a case of I have to keep on top of this stuff for the site. I honestly don't know if I don't think I would be ordering the pay-per-view this Sunday based on the show I watched last night, which to me makes it pretty much a failure. I don't want to give it an F grade because, you know, that Bobby Roode promo existed. Bully Ray and Joseph Park had a great segment. So, and then there were some things that were okay, they just didn't excite me, you know. But that alone, where it made me, I came out of the show less excited to see Slammiversary than I did going in, makes the show a failure.
and that is absolutely okay. Yeah, so I think that will just about wrap it up for this edition of Impact Wrestling Audio. I hope you liked the change up in the format with the match rundown and finally getting to the main event and everything. If you didn't, drop us a line. Let me know. Email me. My address is all over the site. My Twitter's all over the site. So, yeah, hit us up with some notes. And Ryan's email and Twitter are all over the site as well. And thank you so much for listening to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast.